Most of the words you just heard sung in that anthem, in addition to being from the Hebrew prophet Amos, are taken from the sermons and speeches of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. And I'd like to share with you more of his words. This first passage is taken from his last presidential address as president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. The date is August 16, 1967. Dr. King said, "And one day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? And when you begin to ask that question, you are raising questions about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you're beginning to ask the question about the capitalistic economy. And I'm simply saying, the more and more, that more and more we've got to begin to ask the questions about the whole system." It has been 44 years since the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Had he not been killed, and if my math is right, he would be 82 years old today. Surely he would not be that fiery young marcher for civil rights, but he would certainly be one of our elder moral voices, and I'm sure he would have plenty to say about our society of today. Since King's death in 1968, a lot has changed, and a lot has not changed. On some issues of justice, great progress has been made. On others, there has been little progress, and on some, we even have gone backwards. The civil rights movement led by Dr. King and many others has dramatically changed our nation for the better. Racism has not totally disappeared, but protections against racial discrimination are now codified in our laws and enforced by our courts. We have come to the point that many in that movement thought they would never see a black president of the United States. A whole new chapter in the civil rights movements, the campaign for equal rights for gays and lesbians and bisexuals and transgender folks, has made great strides forward. We are not at the point where these people enjoy the full benefits and protection of the laws in all states or even in our federal system. But 44 years ago, where we are today would have seemed unbelievable. And I am sure Dr. King, had he lived, and in spite of any biblical reservations he might have had, and I actually don't think he would have had any, for if you read his sermons, you will see that he indeed took a very liberal interpretation of Scripture. I believe he would have been a supporter of this movement because he fundamentally believed that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. King realized, and increasingly so in the latter years of his short life, that the struggle for racial equality was part and parcel of a greater struggle, and that struggle was to claim the universal dignity and worth of every individual. We've come a long way, but still, in King's words, there are some things in our society to which all of us ought to feel maladjusted. There are still things to overcome, moral wrongs to address. At the end of his life, Dr. King was dedicating himself to new areas beyond racial justice. He was speaking out boldly on the issues of poverty and economic justice for all people, and in opposition to the Vietnam War. Many, even at that time and still today, want to revere King as the leader of the black civil rights movement, but do not want to hear his message in these other areas. Regarding his stance on Vietnam, for example, the Washington Post declared that King had diminished his usefulness to his cause, his country, and his people. Even some of his followers and supporters then criticized him, advising him to stop and stick to his issue. They told him, "Martin, you're going too far afield. We'll lose credibility. We'll risk undoing the progress the civil rights movement has made." But he did not see it as going far afield at all. for these are all related issues. His campaign for civil rights, his campaign for economic justice, and his campaign for peace all rest on the same moral conviction. What I'm suggesting to you today is that Dr. King had a fundamental philosophy, a theology, which proclaimed, as we Unitarians say we do, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. This belief was the driving force in the civil rights movement, and it was also fundamental to his opposition to war. What would Dr. King say today to a nation that, at least until a few weeks ago, has been fighting two wars? Are we not in a similar position than we were at the end of his life, fighting a seemingly endless war for very questionable reasons? A war which, like the Vietnam War, drains our nation's resources and robs us of the funds needed to address the welfare of those in our nation. What would he say of the mentality that war breeds in a society? You see, when you fight a war, you must dehumanize your enemy. You must see him or her as less than you and your kind. If you think of it, war is always an assault on human dignity and worth, the inherent nature of which we proclaim as our first principle. War not only kills those we call our enemy, but for those of us that support and fund and fight it, it erodes our ability to live with a true sense that everyone has equal dignity and worth. If you will, war maladjusts us all. What would Dr. King say if he had turned on his television this week and saw those Marines lined up urinating on the corpses of their enemy? Surely, he would say, you see how war robs you of any ability to see the dignity and worth of every individual? Please understand, I don't say this out of disrespect for those in the military, and I'm sure this was an aberration, and this sermon is not in any way intended as an attack on those who serve in our military. Rather, it is, as Dr. King would say, an attack on something far more fundamental. It is a critique of the moral conscience of our society. He would say we must evolve as a society. We must, he would say, before it's too late, evolve for all human conflicts a method that rejects revenge and aggression and retaliation. It is love and respect for the dignity and worth of the individual that is the foundation upon which a nonviolent approach to conflict resolution must rest. This view of the equal worth and dignity of every individual was also particularly critical to King's speaking out for economic justice. If Dr. King were with us today, you know he would be speaking out boldly on this issue. You heard in the first reading I shared with you, Dr. King telling us in 1967 that we have to ask the question why there are 40 million people living in poverty in this country. Well, today, there are 50 million people in this country living below the official poverty line, and worse, with 97 more million falling into what the Census Bureau creates as a new category as low-income poor, those who earn less than twice the poverty line, which, by the way, is about $22,000 a year for a family of four. Essentially, this government census tells us that almost 48% of Americans are poor. Almost half. It's appalling that in a society that has made progress in so many areas of social justice in the last 40 years, that the poverty rate today is higher than when Martin Luther King Jr. organized the Poor People's March back in 1968. Dr. King's observation then was that the system is not working and that we have to call into question our entire economic system. King said then that the times demand that we look at the whole picture of how our economic system distributes wealth in our country. If King's arguments had resonance back in the 60s, surely they have even more resonance now. Wouldn't he just love what the Occupy movement is doing? They're not saying we want this little thing or this specific thing or that little thing. They're saying we have to look at it all. They are calling the whole system into question. And our government, controlled by the wealthy, really doesn't know how to respond. People are saying to government, no more throwing a bone here and there. They're saying our system needs some fundamental changes. We've been doing little patches and fixes, but the underlying problem seems worse than ever. You know that Dr. King would be speaking out boldly on this issue. He would say, forget focusing on those quick little fixes that make desperate people momentarily happy. You know, a little tax cut here, a few more weeks of unemployment benefits there. Yes, those are important to the person in the moment, but they do nothing to address the long-term problem of economic justice in this country. King compared this kind of government action more than once to improving the food in prison while the prisoner remains securely behind bars. And isn't that the position that so many Americans are in today? Dr. King didn't pull any punches. He said it right out. There must be a broader distribution of wealth in this country, and the elimination of the disproportionate influence that money, that the money of the rich has on government that is supposed to be acting in the best interest of all the people. He would condemn the power money has in government. He would condemn a nation that puts a corporation, which by definition only exists to make money, on the same status in our political system as human beings, who hopefully have the capacity to act with the interests of their fellow human beings in their hearts. He would speak truth to power. He once said that it is the collision of immoral power with powerless morality which constitutes the major crisis of our time. And isn't that what we're seeing today as huge financial interests wield their clout over elected officials? Maybe it's strong to say, but isn't this the crisis that the Occupy movement really illustrates? Aren't those gathered in city parks trying to speak from a place of conscience to those they claim exercise power immorally? Dr. King would say that some things that we call progress are not progress at all. The very tools we use to measure and evaluate our economy, the numbers on the Dow or on the NASDAQ, they're the wrong evaluative tools. It is not economic progress if government policies make more money for the rich at the cost of jobs for the poor. You can make all the free market arguments you want. You can tell me that a rising tide floats all boats, but it doesn't float the boat anchored on the short chain to the bottom. As the water rises, it rushes in, and it swamps that boat. And it sinks. And isn't that really the way more and more our economy seems to be working? In his last speech to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, a speech marked by the theme of divine dissatisfaction with a society that fails to recognize the worth and dignity of every human being, and that puts the great profits of a few above a decent life for the many. In that he says that a society has to do more than serve better meals to those it imprisons through an unjust economic and political system controlled by the wealth of a few. King would say to America today what he said to America in that speech. He would say, America, you need to be reborn. You have the moral principles embedded in your framework, but you are not living them. The immoral use of power has contorted them. Businesses are important, but no matter what any Supreme Court says, they are not individuals with human dignity and worth. Their interests in making money are not a bad thing, but they are not the same kind of interest as it as is fostering the dignity and worth of every individual. Their interests are not unimportant, but they are always subsidiary to those of real human beings whose pain seems to be presently being ignored, who occasionally are given a bone to quiet them, but who still hunger for real change. America, King says, you need to be born again to who you say you are. And it isn't the fancy talk and complex talk of money, but the simple talk of real people that you need to listen to, America. King would be the first to say that the road ahead will not be easy, but he would quote, as he often did, those words of the 19th century Unitarian minister Theodore Parker. In fact, he quoted them so often that in many sources today they're attributed to Dr. King and not to Parker. But they're our own Parkers, and they say that the moral arc of the universe may be long, but it bends towards justice. And friends, what Dr. King really recognized was that there were certain critical times on that arc, times when ordinarily people see deeply the wrong or the injustice in something and raise their voices to change course, raise their voices to bend the arc, if you will. King said it succinctly. He said, human salvation lies in the hands of the creatively maladjusted. I think we are at or near one of those times again in our society. It's no longer the voice of white racists that have the ears of those in power, but the voice of money that seems to buy the policies of government today. There is much to overcome. Yet if we can fight two wars and bail out huge banks, we must have the resources to create jobs, to care for the basic needs of our families, and to promote peace. Deep in our hearts, I think we know that is true. Sometimes it's hard for me to realize how we got to the obscene position that we're in today. Yet we've had major social changes before in our society, and I suspect we will again. The very last words of King's last speech to that conference were words of hope, that we will not in some distant future time, he said, seeing not we shall, but we have overcome. From those marches for civil rights to King's last great march on Washington, the Poor People's March, and from pulpits and churches, large and small, and in conversations with leaders to every ilk of every ilk, what King preached was always an invitation to come and to go with him to that land where there will be true freedom and true justice for all, and where the equal worth and dignity of every individual will be respected. If he could speak to us today, I'm sure what he would do is extend that same invitation to you.